This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. CPS Energy has released its new flexible path to clean energy. The city-owned utility plans to generate about half of its power from renewable energy sources by 2040, and coal will remain in the mix till about 2042. When CPS Energy presented the plan to City Council earlier this month, some citizens expressed concerns. They say a more aggressive pace to clean power is required. So how can CPS Energy move forward to meet the demands for clean energy production while also maintaining affordable, reliable energy for San Antonio area consumers? How aggressive do you want CPS Energy to be in the drive to be coal-free or carbon-free? But it's not going to be free-free. You have to pay for it. The number to call in is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. And you can email us at thesource@tpr.org and tweet at us at @tprsource. We're joined this afternoon. We have Chris Yokester here. He is the Chief Operating Officer for CPS Energy. Kim Stoker is the Senior Director of Environmental Planning and Compliance and Sustainability at CPS. Rick Luna is the Senior Manager of Product Development at CPS. And again, you can call in. The number is 210-614-8980. And Chris, welcome back to The Source.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for having us.
So tell me more about this plan. Why flexible? Why is that a big word in this?
So basically, the utility industry is undergoing tremendous change. There's technologies coming out. We see rooftop solar systems go across our community. Electric vehicles are starting to show up in our community. You got new approaches to energy efficiency and demand response and conservation. So there's a lot of change going on. And so when there's a lot of change, you want to be flexible so you can be nimble to integrate these technologies and these different approaches as they come. And so that's really kind of the essence of why we want to be flexible. Part of this plan is not to build another power plant. So in past years, these strategic energy plans have a power plant coming on in the next decade, in the next coming decade.
And this is even as more people are moving to San Antonio.
Right, exactly. So we need to provide the power for the more people and the economic vitality of the city itself. And so, again, one of the key themes of this plan is not to have to build another power plant. And what our belief is, there's, you know, folks out there think that or advocate for gas to be kind of the transition fuel from coal to renewables. Our belief is a better idea is to use the existing fleet that we have, that this community's invested in, that's performing reliably, to transition this to this future of 100% renewables and storage.
All right. So, Kim Stoker, you're the environmental planning, compliance, sustainability person at CPS Energy. How does that fit with that?
So CPS Energy, we've been reducing our emissions significantly over the years. So from 1997, we've reduced our nitrogen oxide emissions by over 75%. When we stopped running the
And that's what causes like acid rain and stuff.
Ozone.
Oh, okay.
And so when we stop running our Dealey coal plant later this year, there'll be an additional 30% reduction in nitrogen oxides. And also 90% reduction in sulfur dioxide and about a 30% reduction in carbon dioxide.
So it's the sulfur that causes the acid?
Yes, the sulfur causes
the acid. I know that's something it's coming out of somewhere. So when y'all take down the Dealey plant, are you going to blow it up? What are you going to do? When's that going to happen?
That's going to be a huge milestone for our community. I mean, those are two coal plants that are retiring at the end of this year. They're shutting down. And we're going to back up that plant, we had to go and acquire the Rio Nogales combined cycle plant in Seguin, Texas, to kind of support the power for our city. So it's going to be a huge milestone in terms of reduction of emissions, water use, and it puts us on this journey to lower emissions, kind of higher quality, lower emission fleet.
So taking down the Dealey is a coal burning power plant, taking that down early. And you said, what is it going to be, solar that's going to be coming in to take up the slack?
So it's going down 15 years ahead of schedule, so we've brought that up. But it's going to, right now, the challenge, solar, and we've got a lot of solar. We're the number one solar utility in the state of Texas. We put a lot of solar, about 500 megawatts across our grid. We've got Rick Luna, who's done a lot of rooftop solar programs here in our community. But the problem with solar is it only produces power when the sun is shining. When the sun doesn't shine, it doesn't produce power. And so you can't back up a one-for-one backup for a coal plant or a gas plant with solar today, you need energy storage. So until we get to a place where you have solar plus storage at the utility scale for an 800 megawatt plant, you can't just replace a coal plant with a solar farm.
Okay, so let me go over to Rick Luna. You're the Senior Manager of Product Development at CPS, and you're looking at the solar part of the equation and the storage. So we're talking about these battery farms that it's not really prime time technology right now, right? That's coming online?
Batteries are emerging as a more affordable resource. I think that there's still advances to be made in the technology.
I'm reading about new advances in technology and components and chemical components for awesome batteries that are getting more stable, higher capacity, being able to do more with them and cheaper, and less reliant on scarce materials.
Yeah, let me tell you. So batteries have been around for a long, long time. We've got batteries in smartphones, small batteries that store watts of energy. Now we're starting to see those batteries scale up to electric vehicles, kilowatts of energy.
Right.
When we're talking about utility scale, we're talking about megawatts. We're talking about hundreds of megawatts.
Right.
And so to a 4-megawatt battery system is the size of a shipping container, and that gives you 1 hour of duration. And so after 1 hour, you basically have a dead battery. So to have 24 hours of duration, you need 24 of those 4-megawatt shipping containers.
And how much does one of those cost?
It's sizable. And so, it's not that the technology won't get there. It's going to get there, but how fast it gets there. And part of the flex plan is it allows us to integrate that technology once it's in there. We've got 550 megawatts for a 4-hour duration in the plan itself.
All right. So back to you, Rick Luna, tell me more about that. How is this coming online? When do we get those? We don't have those yet, right? That's in the plan is to achieve
them. We do have a 1-megawatt battery system that is paired up with a solar system in our mix right now. We're looking to put another 5-megawatt solar, 10-megawatt battery system in place this year. So we're starting to experiment, but it's not of the size and scale of a big power plant.
Okay, so I keep asking Rick questions.
Sorry.
Chris, Rick, give me something.
Well, I can talk about our solar programs, and we've seen a significant amount of interest on the part of our customers.
A lot of interest.
Almost 90 megawatts now that's been deployed, 11,000+ systems that have been built. We recently added $15 million additional funding for solar rebates. So, the path for solar, the conversation about batteries is very similar, right? Costs have come down. Technology has improved. And so we're seeing wider adoption, both not just at the residential, there's always been interest there, but really in the commercial side, we're seeing increasing interest on the part of customers.
All right, so we're talking about CPS Energy's clean energy plan, its flexible plan. We got a lot of calls lined up here. If you want to join the conversation, the number is 210-614-8980. Coal will be in the mix until 2042. And at 2040, they expect that 50% of this power will be generated with clean sources. But some people say that's not fast enough. What do you have to say about that? The number is 210-614-8980. We'll find out how they achieved this plan. And how flexible is it, actually? And the source continues after this. Welcome back to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about CPS Energy's clean energy plan. What do you want CPS Energy to do to achieve a realistic expectation for becoming a clean energy provider? Other cities across the nation have announced a more aggressive approach. What makes CPS Energy different? Our circumstances, we're talking about that this afternoon. The number to call in is 210-614-8980. And let's go to the phone lines. Meredith is on the line. Meredith, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I've taught courses at Trinity University on health and the environment since 1988, and I know how much the coal-fired power plants here are affecting people's health. I think it's great that CPS will be shutting down Dealey plant this year, but I'm appalled that CPS is considering running the newer coal-fired power plants for decades because they've invested a lot of money in them. They want to get some return on that investment. But what about the other costs of those plants? The air pollution that causes asthma, strokes, heart attacks, and death? The public utility should invest in the people's health as a priority and close those plants as quickly as possible. Why are you even considering keeping them running for decades to come?
Okay, Meredith, thank you for the call. So, Chris Uexter, Chief Operating Officer of CBIS Energy.
Yeah, you know, look, that's a great question. It's a fair question. Part of the challenge is this community put on one of the last new coal plants in Texas, Spruce 2. It's a billion-dollar plant that came online in 2010. Those plants typically have a 55-year life. That plant was approved and developed in a different time. It was, you know, when natural gas prices were very volatile, pre-shale. It was when renewables was just starting to take off here in Texas. And so you can see the enormity of that kind of decision. It really sets the course. So if we wanted to move it up, and we're open to those kind of dialogues, there is going to be stranded costs associated with it. You know, you have a $1 billion investment, and if you're not going to, if you're going to shut it down today, you know, that there's financing associated with that, there's costs associated with that, and there will be a cost to bear with that. But the trade-off between that and some of the environmental factors, we're very open to that conversation.
So Spruce 1, which is a coal-fired plant, was supposed to continue operation until 2047, and now you're looking at 2030?
Yeah, we brought it down to 2030. And again, we're open to, you know, bringing it down further. But again, we want to be thoughtful because there are costs associated with those decisions. And so we need to kind of fully understand the entire picture.
But Spruce 2 is the newer one.
That's the one that just came online.
And you say just came online. It was
2010.
2010, yeah. So and so $1 billion have been, but it's still an expensive operation. Like burning coal is a more expensive thing to burn, right?
You know, so someone gave me a great analogy. It's like, you know, you buying a gas guzzling car here in 2015, and you're all excited. You got all the bells and whistles on it, and then the next year you want a Tesla. But you still have a 5-year note on that car. You got, you know, a commitment to that car. So even if you just go and buy a Tesla, you still have a financial commitment there. A power plant is even more of that. It's a 40-year sort of commitment that the investment has been made on behalf of the community.
All right, back to the callers. Russell. And Russell, hi, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Yes, Chris, I appreciate the conversations that you've had with the environmental community over the years. We have had many of these conversations. Power and energy is what Paula Gull Williams did not explain well. The difference between a power, the boilerplate label of a power plant, and energy, the megawatt hours that we use per hour that we actually use. And then you all have done a terrible job communicating to the public that between 5 o'clock and 8 o'clock, the wind is not blowing yet, the sun is not shining yet, and to create in the community public consciousness that we need to get our demand down during these hours. You got a 95% rollout on your smart meters. When are you going to start a campaign, maybe with pricing, price signals, time of use pricing, that our power at these times is evil? Thank you.
All right, Russell, thank you for that. So, Chris, do you want to respond?
Yeah, I'll take it first part.
Help me understand the question.
Yeah, I'll have Rick. There are certain times our peak power consumption happens at, you know, 6, 7 o'clock at night when people come home, and that's where peak consumption happens.
Turn on the AC.
Our community. You turn on the AC, you're at home, you're ready to kind of relax. So that's when all of our power plants have to be available to, you know, produce power for our city, especially on an August afternoon. And so what Russell is talking about is if we can do demand response, or people can conserve during those hours, or maybe change, you know, how they use their systems in their homes, you can basically reduce that peak, and you can reduce having to run a power plant during those high demand hours. And so a couple things, and I'll let Rick also comment on this. You know, we do have a Reduce My Use campaign about reducing your use on high demand days. The CPS Energy web portal, Manage My Account, has information there on how efficient you are as a homeowner relative to your neighbors, relative to the most efficient home that's like yours. And so there are tools that we've got that homeowners can use to conserve power, conserve energy during those critical times.
And so, Rick Luna?
Yeah, if I can add on to that, you know, and Russell brings up a great point, is what can customers do to help reduce energy use, especially at the peak times? Chris alluded to the Reduce My Use program. That was a new effort we rolled out last summer. We're going to come back with that this summer. And this is where 100,000 customers will receive messaging from CPS Energy on the day before we think will be a peak day. And what we found last year, it was a limited basis. We ran a couple of events, but we saw that customers are very responsive to messaging, you know, to information about when is a peak day. So we're excited about that. We think there's some real opportunity there. The other part is technology. You know, technologies in the home have really advanced. Nest thermostats, there's other technologies out there that really help customers maybe proactively or even passively manage their energy use. And so part of our role is to develop the programs, the variety of programs to help customers manage their use. And so we have, you know, we're proud of our STEP program. We've been big, you know, we've been real leaders in energy efficiency and really giving customers a broad range of ways they can do exactly what Russell said, which is manage their energy use.
There used to be a lot of talk of people having wall batteries in their homes. That would be something that if they had a solar array on top of their house, that they would be able to store up energy throughout the day and then when they're not home, and then use it during those hours. But, you know, you have to have an economic incentive for people to do that. But so if you do pricing, peak pricing, is that something that would motivate someone or try and drive something like that? And that way you wouldn't have to have these massive batteries located around the city, but, you know, people take care of that on their own.
You know, batteries for the home are still emerging. I think that the promise of that is still out there. It's really a factor of cost. Most homeowners don't have $25,000 to invest in a battery system. Plus, on top of that, you know, the solar, you know, can be expensive as well. But it's exciting. And we have some customers out there who've done that. And we're exploring ways to be able to test our ability to send signals and possibly control batteries to do exactly what today a thermostat does, which is reduce energy during a peak event in a way that the customer doesn't have any disruption to their lifestyle.
Yeah, we don't know what technology is going to be out there absolutely. 5-10 years from now. So that's the thing that's hard to factor into a plan like yours.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, I think the way to think about it is not necessarily time of use rates, but more pricing plans. Can we get our customers different pricing plans that work for them that they can sign up for? I mean, I don't know if we can get to free nights and weekends, you know, when there's a lot of wind in our system. And that can help customers change how they use their systems and ultimately kind of reduce that peak that Rick and Russell were talking about.
All right, so let's go back to the phone. So let's go to Elizabeth. And Elizabeth, hi, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Thank you, Dave, again for a great great program. I'm calling to challenge the marketing claim that that natural gas is a clean energy production item. It is not. First of all, studies have shown that the methane that accumulates through the production of this natural gas and through leaks, and there are many, many places where this leaks into the environment, is up to 86 times more destructive to the ozone layer than coal ever was. That's been proven by research since the onslaught of fracking. Plus, if you look at the amount of environmental damage, the destruction of water, the contamination of air, the utilization and destruction of land surface, which used to be agricultural, just to produce the natural gas, then that doesn't hold up either, because much pollution is produced from the production of this natural gas. It's supposed to be so clean. It is true that it used to be claimed as cleaner than coal. It is not. And then finally, it's not going to be cheaper, because this industry has now globalized its market through the LNG plants and through shipping this product to meet the demands in Europe and in the Orient, and those are already in existence and many more are planned. So with the globalization, the excess that has been in holding tanks until they could get this market going is going to be used up, and then more production will happen and the cost is going to rise. And so I challenge all of those claims of this industry.
Elizabeth, thank you so much for calling in. So there's a lot going on with natural gas. It's not as clean. I mean, it's as some people claim. right?
Well, I guess two things on that. You know, part of the flex plan is not to build a bunch of natural gas combined cycle plants, which is kind of where the industry's at. Retire coal, build a bunch of combined cycle. We're saying we're not going to do that. We're
no
not
more
do that.
Massive facilities.
Right.
They're going to burn something.
Right. We're going to basically use our existing fleet in this transition period. We're going to start to add renewables, storage, demand response, energy efficiency. But our view is leveraging our existing fleet, and that includes coal for a while, is a better way to get there than building a bunch of new natural gas plants.
And so, but what about everything that Elizabeth told us? Let me go over to, Kim. Can you talk about, those concerns?
So I'll just briefly mention that there's been a lot of progress as far as, natural gas production, just the methane emissions. I mean, companies out there, they're making a lot of progress. A lot of controls are being put on. Natural gas plants actually do generate almost about half less carbon dioxide, than coal plants. So from that perspective, they are, cleaner. We've been reducing our emissions, just the flex path, but based on the flex path, by 2040, we will reduce the intensity of carbon dioxide by about 74%, nitrogen oxide by about 83%, and sulfur dioxide by about 97%, and that's from the year 2018.
So Elizabeth mentioned the concern about methane, and we know that methane is also a big contributor to the greenhouse effect. And that's a part of this. The reason why we're having these conversations is that we're concerned about global warming. So mm-hmm. so that's something to keep an eye on, right?
Yeah, so absolutely. And in fact, 2 days ago, you can see it in the press, we introduced an advanced methane detector where we can go, because CPS
Energy. That's a big sniffer truck.
That's a big sniffer truck. CPS Energy is both an electric and gas delivery service. So we have quite a bit of gas infrastructure, natural gas infrastructure, in terms of delivering gas to our customers. And so this sniffer will go out and basically detect if there are any leaks. And from a safety perspective, that helps us. But also from an environmental standpoint, it also helps us because we basically capture that methane or stop that leak in a much more proactive way.
How sensitive is that truck?
It's very sensitive.
So if I didn't light my pilot light, is it going to
go
off?
I think the unique aspect of it, Dave, is it's got a lot of analytics. So not only is the sensitivity very very precise, but it's also kind of where it's coming from. So it looks at wind direction, wind speed. So it can not only sense that there is natural gas in that neighborhood, a leak in that neighborhood, but it can also isolate where that leak is.
And so that could avoid early detection of major gas leaks?
Yes, yes.
So that's a public safety concern.
It's a public safety and also environmental concern.
Okay, Art, we're going to take another break. When we come back, we really want to dig into these numbers for these targets on the reduction of coal, elimination of coal, clean energy. Other cities have announced really aggressive plans, and I would like to try and understand why we can't do that here in San Antonio. Why we're different than that, and what does this mean for ratepayers? Also, people who get to pay your energy bill, what's it going to look like when you open up that envelope? The number to call in is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. The source continues after this break. You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. We hear all the time about the dangers, the conditions that are coming with global warming. Oceans are rising. The temperatures are rising. Storms are getting worse. Hurricane Harvey, other storms, they're just going to get worse and worse, and because global warming is a real thing. And burning coal, burning carbon, that's part of it. That's what's adding to the situation. A lot of people are hoping that we can do our part to reduce San Antonio's role in carbon production by going through our city-owned energy utility, CPS Energy. They have released their energy plan in which they're promising to have a target of getting off of coal by 2042. What do you feel about that? Is that soon enough? Give us a call. The number is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. And Greg is on the line. Greg, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Yeah, thank you for a great show. Thank you to your guests, yourself, for putting this together. I think one of the things that I think is important to recognize is that this is a really broad community in San Antonio that has a problem with this plan. Starting last summer, you know, the people from the religious community, labor community, social justice, indigenous concerns, and the traditional environmental voices got together and demanded a climate plan for the city. And so now we have a climate action adaptation plan moving forward. And yet CPS, when they brought this vision out last week, it was not a vision to net zero. It was something very different from that. It was what Paula Gold Williams described as simply a business case scenario. And so they could have brought, they had the opportunity to bring something out that was really visionary, and it didn't come. And so I think it's important to go back a few years, and CPS, you know, was making a business case for two more nuclear power plants not very long ago, SCP 3 and 4, and our community stood up against that. And we're right. It went from $6 billion project to, I think, up to $18 billion. And we lost, the city lost tens of millions of dollars getting out of that contract. It was these same interests, community concerns that pushed to get, you know, the dirtiest coal plant in San Antonio shut down. And guess what? We still have reliable and affordable rates, thanks a lot to the work that CPS is doing, but also some false premises that we really needed energy we didn't need. And so we're talking about a plan that isn't a plan. A vision, I've been told, is not a vision, but we haven't set a hard date. You know, we're still operating on a more than decade-old promise that we're going to get to 20% reduction by 2020. And, you know, San Antonio can't wait. The world can't wait. We need to drive to zero, if not, you know, negative carbon. So, you know, these same groups of religious concerns, indigenous folks, labor, all this, we're driving for that. We're going to keep driving for that. And until we get there, you know, it's important to recognize, like other folks have mentioned, you know, we're going to continue to be poisoning our communities. Natural gas just isn't in San Antonio with a sniffer truck. It's out there across the Eagle Ford and around the state. And that's where the methane is getting out.
Okay.
I mean,
all right, Greg, thank you for that. So there's a lot of points there, but you can hear the passion and the urgency that Greg is talking about in trying to get off of coal and carbon in San Antonio. The question is, does CPS Energy feel the same level of urgency? He says this is a business plan, and you guys are a business, but also, I mean, you're the number one, the largest municipal-owned utility in the country, and a lot of people, and you have been a leader in many ways over the years, and hope that CPS Energy will lead in this area as well.
Yeah, look, I think we have that same passion. Look, we all want to be in the same place in terms of 100% renewables and having kind of zero carbon, zero emissions. How do we get there? How do we make sure things maintain affordability to our community? How do we maintain reliability? Those are the issues that we're kind of working through. But we're committed to an open dialogue on this flex plan. So, you know, we will, you know, these timelines are, you know, going to be determined by how technology evolves, how we deal with some of the past investments, the stranded costs we've got to deal with. But we want to kind of get to the same place, and we're very committed to an open dialogue. The only thing I'd add to that is, look, we're a big player. I mean, we're the third largest power producer in the state of Texas. We're vertically integrated. We got coal, gas, nuclear, renewables in our fleet. We got over 1 million customers. We're a big player. So if we can figure this out, this would be huge, not only for San Antonio, but for the entire country and the entire globe.
So when another city, like Boulder, Colorado, says they're going to be 100% renewable, you know, in a number of years, you know, they're able to put a figure on it. I think it was 2050 or something like that. Is that something that, I mean, is that like they're just making up numbers, or they have a different type of city, or why can St. Petersburg, same thing, you know, other cities, like 50 different cities across the United States, you know, have come out with some sort of number saying we will be clean energy by this date. Why can't we do that?
Yeah, so again, there's enough renewables in there to basically attribute those electrons to your facilities or to your city, especially if you're kind of a small enough city with no generation assets. And a lot of recognition and kudos to them for going down that path. And a lot of recognition for CPS Energy to build up as much solar as we have in this state and being kind of number one in Texas. I think the challenge, though, is until you get storage at the utility scale, you cannot have reliable power. The reason it works for those communities is they still are connected to the grid. There still is some balancing that's happening to support the reliability of those communities.
So I just want to try and get an idea of when people are saying we're going to make this our goal. I mean, people can make goals all day long. I have a goal to go to the gym today. I'm not going to go, you know. So how real are these goals?
Well, I think if you're a small enough community within a bigger system, it's very real. I mean, you're 100% renewables. But if the entire state of Texas wanted to be 100% renewables, we would need energy storage. We'd need battery storage in a big, big way. And so that's where I think it's a little bit different. Again, I think there's no issue with aspirational goals of, you know, if the city of San Antonio through the Climate Action Plan and Adaptation Plan wants to get to 100% renewables by this date, we will certainly factor that into what we're thinking and figure out how we can close some of those gaps, which are technology-based as well as cost-based. So we are committed to a journey here with our community to get there in a way that is reliable and affordable to our community.
So the city of San Antonio does have a climate action and adaptation plan, and it's still pretty kind of new.
Yes.
It's just getting started. How much interaction did you have with this committee and this group when y'all came up with your flex plan?
Well, look, we're a big part of that effort. You know, we're funding UTSA to the tune of $500,000 to support this effort. We're working with the city of San Antonio as the lead for this effort with Doug Melnick. And part of that is not just the power sector, it's transportation, it's buildings, it's a much wider kind of aspiration of how do we get to a net zero community with all sorts of factors about quality of life and sustainability and resiliency. So there are a lot of different factors in there. So that has to play, that plays its course. This also plays its course. And I think there's a lot of overlap between the two of them.
Yeah, but a big part of the whole puzzle is going to be, you know, where are we going to get our electric power from?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
All right, another caller. This is Stephen. And Stephen, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Thank you. First, I want to let people know how really fortunate we are to have a utility company that's owned by the city and therefore much more responsive. And I'm also hoping that in addition to these moves right now to get away from coal, are there going to be other incentives that are going to be CPS-based for the construction industry to incentivize the more aggressive and progressive ways of doing energy conservation and construction methods?
All right, Stephen, thank you for the call. So let me go to Rick Luna, Senior Manager of Product Development at CPS Energy, for your response.
I would say that we have those programs today through our new construction rebate programs for use of any efficient materials, technologies in buildings. We would say, you know, go to our website. We have the information there. Or give us a call, and we can help you find opportunities to save energy in your new building and find the incentives that would help support adoption of the most efficient technologies that are out on the marketplace.
But it shows you there's all sorts of different ways that we need to be thinking about becoming a clean city. It's not just, you know, CPS Energy and how you produce it power, but how we're going to use power,
right,
when we're the receiver of it and how we're going to do that responsibly.
Absolutely.
All right. Let's go to another caller. This is Terry. Hi, Terry. Welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
I congratulate CPS for being flexible and not wanting to build another billion-dollar power plant. I think that in hindsight, it's clear that Spruce 2 was a mistake. I think SAWS would be wise to not be building Vista Ridge because in hindsight, we'll also recognize it as a mistake. These large expenditures don't respond to the rapid market changes. I think CPS is correct in looking for these upcoming changes, and I congratulate them. I just urge them to be more aggressive in adopting renewables. Thank you.
Thank you for the call, Terry. And so, Chris, these things have happened, and, you know, we can't talk about Vista Ridge. That's a whole different show.
That's a different show.
You know, we've had those shows, yeah, and we'll have more of them. But, you know, so Spruce 2 is there. But think about Spruce 1. You know, there's still a lot of upgrades that have to be made to mm-hmm. Spruce 1. And it's going to cost, $180 million, something like that?
Yeah, to put SCRs, which basically deals with ozone, it's about $130 million. And we we've decided not to make that investment so that we can shut down that plant earlier.
Okay, so...
And then to Terry's comments, I mean, I appreciate the comments. I mean, I think part of it is the reality of the situation that we find ourselves in. You know, that plant was approved and designed in a different time, a different team here at CPS Energy. And so, you know, but the fact is it's here. It is producing power reliably, and it has been an investment. And so, you know, part of this journey that we're going to go through is to kind of better understand how soon we can take a plant like that offline.
I'd just like to add one point to that. So the Spruce 2 plant, regarding sulfur dioxide and nitrogen oxide emissions, it is the fourth cleanest coal plant in the nation.
Because it's relatively
because
new.
Because it's new. Of this over 600 coal plants.
Okay, we'll talk about that more when we come back. The number to call in is 210-614-8980. The Source continues after this. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about CPS Energy's clean energy plan. Is it aggressive enough? And how much does it consider the stability, reliability of San Antonio's energy grid? Having that as an important component for the city is, you know, businesses won't move here if you don't have reliable power. And then also how much we're going to, our rates, that's also a big part of this as well. So there's a balancing act that has to go on. But still at the same time, we have to have a sense of urgency that we are dealing with the global catastrophe with global warming. How do we balance all of that? It's going to be up to you, the ratepayer, the citizens of San Antonio, because at the end of the day, that's who CPS Energy answers to. Give us a call. The number is 210-614-8980. We got an email from Ryan. Can CPS offer incentives to purchase home batteries like the Tesla Powerwall? The incentive that was offered to purchase my solar panels really helped make it affordable. So let me go to Rick Luna, the Senior Manager of Product Development at CPS Energy, for that.
Thank you for the question. You know, that definitely is something we're looking at, is incentivizing batteries. I would say at this point, the cost is so high that you know, we're not sure what the adoption on that would be. So we're running a test this summer to see how the batteries would work and to see how we can shift energy at peak. So I would say, you know, we're gonna test it, but it's not too far down the road that, you know, again, we would look at a battery like we do a thermostat. Today we have a wide variety of incentives to encourage customers to be able to reduce energy through that thermostat. And I think a battery could potentially be the same thing in a home, with the added value that it causes no real disruption to what you're doing in terms of in the home during the peak time.
So since this is your area, what do you see that's exciting coming down the road technology-wise?
Yeah, it's a great question. I think there's a number of things. One is, you know, just the continued proliferation of technologies in the home. The thermostat today, other technologies,
just
water heater
technologies. Just the interconnectivity of everything.
Just the smart home, right? I think there's that piece. I think there's electric vehicles, which we really haven't talked about. You know, because of the advances in battery technology, that opens up a whole range of offerings that the car makers are bringing down the road in the next couple of years. So we think that's a huge opportunity, both in terms of air quality and connections to the grid and so forth. The third thing, is back to batteries. It's something that we're following very closely. And I think, you know, 2, 3, 4 years down the road, potentially offer a significant change in the way that energy is used in the home.
So it seems, do you read about the bench science that's being done with batteries in the labs across the United States and in China? Some of the stuff that they're coming up with is incredible, and using common materials to store high capacity energy, that's it could be a big game changer not that long down the road from us. So it's something to keep an eye on, especially as you make big investments. You don't want to have to invest in, you know, 52 of these giant, massive lithium-type cargo container batteries just to find out 5 years later that you could do the same thing with basically salt, you know, which is some of the bench science is being done now. You got to keep an eye on these developments. I mean, is that something that y'all consider?
Absolutely. And I think, you know, it's like any new technology, right? We have to figure out how to make it work for the customer and how to make it integrate with our grid. And I would say with batteries, we're just on the cusp of that. Today, there's probably fewer than 10 battery customer-owned battery systems connected to the grid. I think as that number continues to grow, it'll be just like solar was, you know, 7-8 years ago, where we're just starting to learn about how to make it work for the utility, of course, but also for the customer, and make it something that can proliferate widely.
All right, back to the phone lines. The number to call in, 210-614-8980, to offer your questions and comments about this future of CPS energy and clean energy production. And Robert is on the line. Hi, Robert. Welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Yes, thank you for taking my call. My question is, does CPS have any plans to distribute natural gas to homes? As a foodie junkie guy, I much prefer to cook with natural gas than electricity. So I'll take my answer off the air. Thank you very much.
All right, Robert, and let's go to Chris for the response.
Yeah, so like I said, we're both an electric and a gas utility. So we do have 300,000 customers that are getting natural gas for their homes or businesses. So what I would say is give us a call.
I don't understand the question, because natural gas stoves are common,
well,
right?
He may be in a place where we don't have our natural gas infrastructure, the pipes that are getting it there. So, but as our system develops, it may be on there, or he may be close to it. So I think if he could give us a call at our main number, we can probably get him an answer.
So this is what you do. This is your business.
That's our core business.
Okay. All right. So let's talk a little bit more about what's happening with the Spruce coal-fired power plants. And now there's been some economic analysis that has looked at these things and found that these are losing money, that they're not economically viable. It's expensive to generate power from these plants versus other sources. Is this the last thing that you use to put on the grid? I mean, how do you balance all that out?
Okay, so a couple things. In the past, we've used our coal plants as baseload power plants. They run 24/7 all the time. More recently, we're using them more as dynamic resources that are basically supporting or firming up our renewables. Like if there's a lot of wind in the system at night, our coal plants may be at minimum load. And then when the wind dies off in the morning and load picks up during the day, the plant may ramp up to full load. So you may go from 200 megawatts of capacity to 800 megawatts, so 25% to 100%. So overall, we're running our plants about half as much. They used to be running at 90% capacity factors. Now they're running at 50% capacity factors. Well, that stresses the economics of a plant, because a coal plant, all of our plants, a gas plant, whatever, even a solar farm, has high fixed costs. There's a high fixed cost to build that plant. And the less you run it, the less megawatt hours you have to sell it or to deliver to the market. So it does stress the economics of these plants. But on a hot August afternoon, we need all of our plants. And that's the problem. You can't shut it down and not provide power to San Antonio today.
Now, the wind component of what's happening now, how maxed out is Texas with wind? Have we hit all the great places, or are there still a lot of places to harvest the wind for power?
There's still tremendous opportunities for both wind and solar here in Texas to add more capacity. But again, it challenges the grid, because you don't know when that's going to show up, especially wind. Solar is a lot more predictable. If it's going to be a hot August afternoon, you know solar is going to show up. With wind, it's a lot harder to predict, and it does create price volatility in the market. And so some of those physical assets that we have helps protect our customers against those price volatilities.
But there's still wind farms being developed across the state. And
they're
still growing. And so where do you think we're going to be? You have your flexible plan, and we know that you're trying to get off of coal by 2042, and wind and solar is going to be more and more of that's going to be taking up the slack.
Yes, yes. And this summer will be interesting. You know, there have been a number of plants that have been shut down here, and the reserve margin for this summer from supply versus demand is getting tighter and tighter. And so renewables, it'll be very interesting to see how renewables perform this summer, the solar and the wind, to make sure that we've got reliable power across Texas.
And are more people still switching over to solar power?
Yeah. So
what's the pace of that?
2017 was a record year in terms of the number of systems that were built. So far in 2018, we see, again, continued strong interest on the part of customers, but not just residential, as I mentioned earlier. We're starting to see a lot of interest on the commercial side. So we recently added an additional $15 million for solar rebates, which we think will last us about a year. We're seeing about $1 million a month is spent on solar rebates. Costs continue to come down. The quality of panels continues to improve. When we go out and talk to customers, solar is usually top of the list in terms of the things that customers want to talk about.
How is this going to impact the rates? What people pay for their power. And Chris, this is the kitchen table final say on whether I'm for it or against it. Mm-hmm. Is like, how much is it going to cost me?
Look, we want to keep rates affordable here in San Antonio. So a big factor in how we think about this is maintaining those affordable bills. We believe the Flex Plan, meets that. And we're open to adding additional technologies and renewables and storage in a way that keeps bills affordable. And we believe that we can have the best of both those worlds. It's not an either or. We can get to the renewables plus storage and still keep bills affordable.
And Kim Stoker, you're the director of environmental planning, compliance, and sustainability at CPS. And are you working closely with local environmental groups to address their concerns?
Yes, we are. We meet with them regularly. We see them at other events. So we're involved with the Climate Action Adaptation Plan, as Chris mentioned. So yes, we're getting their feedback, taking their
And what are they and what are they telling you? I mean, if you're talking to them, they're telling you, we want more. We want more clean.
Some of what we've heard today from the callers, it's that kind of information.
Who makes these final decisions? I mean, is it the board? Is it the city council? Who finally says, this is what I want you to do?
Look, Chris? Ultimately, it's our community that gives us direction. And so part of this is talking to all of our stakeholders. Our board has ultimate governance on us. Our council also has,
Did the council have to vote on their flexible plan, or were they just advised?
No. And this is every year we go through a strategic energy plan. So what we've done this year is we've really taken it open to the public and engaged in this dialogue because it is different. We no longer have power plants as part of our future energy plan. And so now is how fast can we retire our existing fleet? And that's the whole essence of the discussion.
But keeping the power grid in San Antonio stable, reliable, and keeping rates affordable for everyone in the city. And that's what the local economy depends on.
Exactly.
All right. And we got to worry about global warming, climate change. All right. Thank you so much. I want to thank CPS Energy for coming on board today and talking about this important issue. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. Thanks for listening.